Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the stories, and events in Central Iowa. And hello to you, the listener. I'm your host today, Jim Werbel. In addition to supporting the pledge drive, which is happening this week, I'm trying to reveal some of the less well-known secrets of Ames. Yesterday, we had one of those less known secrets right here in the studio, Klaus Rudenberg, giving the history of the atom. Today, I have three other secrets. All are kind of like Clark Kent, you might say. Underneath the modest exterior, we would have what I would like to call Ames cultural ambassadors. These are people who live in Ames, contribute to our community, but make contributions both locally and nationally to the performing arts. That kind of fits the vision of KHOI, where we feature national figures and local voices for the enrichment of our community. So on today's show, we have Michael Ching, who writes music, including opera and musical opera, and recently came back from Savannah, Georgia, where he had a world premiere of his work, Alice Riley. We also have Julie Fox Henson and Alan Henson. Of course, all this is going to be interspersed with pledge drive opportunities. So I'm looking forward to this show. Well, as most of you know, it's Pledge Week, where we ask the listener to officially join the KHOI community with a financial contribution. So if you're listening, some of you are, you're likely to be asking, why should I become a member financially? Or even, why should I renew my membership? I'm getting something free right now for nothing. There are so many things I can give to. Well, let me say three words. Local, variety, and community. They're all reasons. KHOI is local. No other radio station covers local stories and people as well as KHOI. No one else would be talking about Ames cultural ambassadors such as myself. No one. We recently covered the city council election debates with audio direct from the candidates. No one else would do anything like that. We have so many different interests in Ames. Most media outlets focus on one genre of music or news. Well, we just have lots in Ames. We have sport lovers, classical music lovers, jazz lovers, people's interested in science, agriculture, political news. We offer that diversity to represent the different interests in our community and maybe expose you to issues and topics that you'd not normally hear. Community. KHOI's mission is to build community through communication. By emphasizing local and variety, we are enabling voices in our community to be heard. This helps to build community. For example, I recently did a show on Friday, and we talked about the new water treatment plant on 13th Street just east of the softball fields. A friend of mine commented that she had no idea what was being built there and valued hearing about that as a part of our community together. So, if community is important to you, then please join and be a member. You can join at different levels. We have basic membership, $55. Premier membership, $100. $250 lets you become one of our 500 families. You can donate in three ways. Get a paper and pencil out. Come on. Get it out. Jog it down. Stick it in your memory. 292-2878. Call now. Get it off your checklist. Call now. Or go to khoifm.org and hit the donate button right on the front page. Pretty easy to do. Or even more fun, come by the studio and get a tour. 410 Douglas, right across from the Octagon, and be a visible member of the community. So thank you for your contributions. Much appreciated. So let me hear the phone ring or catch you in person. If you come to the studio before 12:55, I'll let you come into the broadcast room and you can actually listen to the end of an interview with the Fox Hensons. Well, I'd like to introduce our first cultural ambassador to you. His name is Michael Ching. Michael, would you please play us a tune on your guitar?
Spot you with my mushroom eye. I will spot you with my mushroom eye. I will spot you with my mushroom eye. So don't try to hide. Don't try to hide. I will put you in my mushroom basket. Sort it carefully in my mushroom basket. I will put you in my mushroom basket. So don't try to hide. Don't try to hide. You're destined for my mushroom pot. Some of you will make a tasty stock go, part mysterious and part mundane, sometimes beautiful and sometimes plain. I will spot you with my mushroom eye, so don't try to hide, don't try to hide.
Michael!
Michael, that's not exactly opera.
No, it's not.
Well, what was the purpose of that song?
Well, we had a mushroom dinner the other day. What was it, earlier this year?
Over at the
garden. And we needed a little entertainment.
And so it was very entertaining.
I volunteered, since I'm not a great mushroom chef. I leave that to Barbara.
Yeah. Well, Michael and I go on mushroom forays together. It's actually how I got to know Michael and his wife, Barbara. They've told me a lot about mushrooms, and I know this has, again, nothing to do with your musical talents, Michael, but how did you get interested in shrooming?
Well, actually, when we moved up here, Barbara really wanted to get involved in mushrooming. And so she launched right in, and it was really not any trouble at all to start doing it here. And she's really gotten a fire lit under her. And, you know, mushrooms turn out to be very fun in the fall as well as the spring.
Are.
I mean, everybody knows about morels, but there are all sorts of other kinds of things out there. So and I consider part of my responsibility is to keep her from getting lost, because she has a very poor sense of direction. And like all mushroom hunters, they tend to be looking at the ground or looking at the trees and not necessarily orienting themselves about where they are. So I keep us from getting lost in the woods.
Well, this song reveals, I think, a lot about Michael, and one reason why I like Michael. We tend to put composers like Michael on a pedestal. As you can just hear him talking right now, Michael, like everyone else, just really likes to have fun. I think that accurately describes Michael.
I think that's accurate. I think music is taken far too seriously, especially classical music or opera, particularly opera. People think of, you know, opera as big old fashioned Italian or Verdi and Wagner and all that sort of stuff. But I have a best known for actually comic opera, and so
Okay, well, let's talk about your world premiere, Michael. Alice Riley, give us a synopsis of your work.
Well, Alice Riley is one of the most famous ghosts in Savannah. And back in the 1730s, she was the first person and definitely the first woman hanged in the Georgia colony. And what happened was that she was accused of having killed her master. And they accused her. They brought her in. They had a trial. They said they were going to hang her, and then it turned out that she was going to have a baby, and so they let poor Alice have her baby, and then they hanged her a couple weeks later. And I think part of the guilty conscience of Savannah is that if you see a young lady and the young lady asks you if you've seen a baby, that's Alice Riley. And she was an Irish indentured servant, came over, had a lot of strikes against her, and really makes for a kind of Puccini-esque operatic heroine.
I was going to say, in some ways it seems to have an operatic theme.
Yeah. It's just, you know, poor girl about to face death.
Michael, this is Donna Prisgintas, and I would like to hear some of this music.
Well, we've got some queued up.
Thank you.
That's a lovely piece of work. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
It's an Irish lullaby. It's actually a real Irish lullaby.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you did the lyrics, but the...
Well, in this particular piece, this is an actual real Irish lullaby, and these are the lyrics from the Irish lullaby. And all I had to do was arrange it for someone who was about to get hanged and just had a baby.
What a theme. Well, let's talk about creativity and how do you compose other pieces. You said that was something that was you clearly borrowed. All you had to do was arrange the music. And I was just – first of all, let me ask, do you sit at a piano and compose or do you do it on computer?
Both. I am trained to sit at a desk and imagine the music come out of my head. But I also like to sit at the piano and jam away at it, and both ways are equally valid, or with a guitar. And so sometimes you do one thing, sometimes you do another thing. And then I'm also a composer librettist, so I write the words and the music to a lot of my material. And so sometimes you work with the words and sometimes you work with the music. It just depends on how the spirit moves you, and it's basically if you're stuck with one thing, you move to the other thing. So if you get paint yourself in a corner with the words.
No writer's block that way.
Well, it does keep you from having that kind of writer's block, yeah. But I'm trained more as a composer than as a wordsmith, but I turned out to enjoy doing words as well.
I'm used to writing, so I think of writing and I think of drafts. I don't know what you call different versions of music, but
drafts, librettos. I mean, sometimes you have to go through several drafts. But the main thing you want to do when you're creating an opera or a piece of musical theater is you have to have a really strong outline, because what you don't want to do is having – you always heard about these songs being cut from shows.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like cutting off your finger. I mean, it's a really horrible thing to have a song cut from a show. So you want to write the structure in such a way that hopefully you don't waste too much music and words. So that's what you try to do, is you don't just sort of write blindly and hope you figure it out. You create an outline first.
So the outline is like the dramatic arc.
Correct.
So
correct.
It's an important piece of the moving the story forward.
Yeah. Dramatic arc. Yeah.
So you said sometimes the words come first, sometimes the music comes first. Is that accurate?
Yeah. But I mean, more often than not, I think the words, at least some of the words, come first. It depends on the kind of music. I don't write rap very much, but when you're doing that, you usually create the beat first, and then you create the text over that. But in opera, you usually have to have a hook, a phrase or something like that to get you going, and then that might create a musical answer. And when you're talking to someone who does both things at the same time, you can't really ask them which comes first, because it just happens very organically.
Well, did the story kind of start you out?
Oh, the story definitely starts you out. You have to. The story is where you begin, because someone asks you to write something based on an idea, a story, what have you, and so that's definitely where you start.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. It's always a challenge. It's fun, though. It's the
Oh, it's a challenge, but I think musical this kind of musical creativity is great, but I think it tends to be overrated by people who don't happen to have that particular set of skills. I know, for example, you're a fantastic cook, and I can give you three or four ingredients, Donna, and you'd be able to figure out something. And, Jim, you're good at what you do. Everybody is good at something, hopefully, and that's what they nurture.
and you find ways to be creative with whatever interests you have.
And so I think of this particular set of skills that I have as a kind of craft, like this table we're sitting at, was nicely, beautifully made. Someone made this, all these great sound equipment and this microphone. I mean, there is a lot of technical skill
that you have to have.
I mean, there's the background in technical skill is definitely there. You know, you have to learn, you have to know counterpoint, harmony, and
notation
and all those kinds of things. But those things can be learned, and once you have them, and you know, keep away. A lot of creativity, I think, is persistence. Is not giving up. Don't
yes,
you think?
Yes, we used to say glue seat of pants to chair.
Yeah,
I always would say, because I have a PhD, and I say that those who finish the PhD, there's some people that were smarter than me that never finished. They just didn't have the will to
persist. Don't have the stick-to-itiveness. Because an opera project will take a year or a year and a half. A full-length project might take a couple years. And so you have to have that willingness to work at it gradually.
On a daily basis. And you got to sit down and do it even when you don't feel like it some days.
Preferably at least 4 or 5 days a week. Yeah, daily would be even better. I do take days off.
you got to go looking for mushrooms,
gotta
right?
Go for a few mushrooms, that's right.
What was your personal reaction, and then what was the public reaction?
Well, the funny thing about it is that they asked me to be the piano conductor of the opera, and I agreed, and I don't usually do that. There was an 8-piece ensemble. And so when you're involved in, you know, cueing the violins, making sure that the singer is with you, you don't really get that full artistic experience, that experience of watching or embracing the show as an audience member. I can tell you for a fact that they want to do it again in August, and they're planning to do it at least once again after that. So that's good news from the point of view of the audience. It means that they liked it and that the audience liked it. So the fact that they're doing it again is a sign that something worked.
And it sounds like it'd be a good show for Halloween.
It has a Halloween overlay, but it's not really it's only a ghost story for about 30 seconds. It's really a show about Savannah, the Georgia colony in the 1730s. And that's it's really a historical drama, and it happens to have a little ghost thing as a sort of commercial hook, I would say.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, just for the audience, I know a little of this, but who else do you work for in terms of musically? What other groups throughout the country do you work for?
Well, I work regularly. I'm the music director of an opera company in Buffalo, and I work regularly with an opera company in Amarillo. So those are the two main places that I've been working for. I also have this opera, this comic opera called Speed Dating Tonight, which was premiered in 2013, which is now on its 22nd production in less than 3 full years. So I just got back from a couple days at McGill in Montreal, where they're doing it tomorrow night and the next night. So it's been very nice to have this successful comedy.
And it sounds like a very current topic.
It's a very light piece about speed dating. Michael's
an expert on speed dating.
Yes, I'm not actually an expert on speed dating, but I've met people who have done it. So,
Michael's into cultural commentary. Yeah.
Actually, you can – I've done it. This is my first introduction to Michael's operatic works, and you can go to YouTube, and you can just do search for speed dating. And
speed dating tonight. Speed dating will get you an entirely another set of hits.
I thought Jim was saying he'd done
Speed dating tonight. And
You can find a production from Brevard. You can find a production from Texas State. I think you might be able to find a production in Ithaca.
So full-length recording of the production?
Yeah, I mean, they're YouTube.
Versions. Well, fantastic.
But you can hear the music.
You can kind of get an idea how it works.
And it's really good music.
No place close to here. I guess in the spring, it's being done at Vanderbilt in Nashville. It's being done in El Paso. They're going to have some Spanish versions of it. That's very exciting. I'm excited about that. And two more places actually as well.
Michael, so you travel this country, and
I travel a little too much. Trying to get a balance of that, because it's important to be home. I like Ames a lot. I think Ames is a wonderful community. I have a daughter in the 11th grade
beautiful daughter.
I've got to take care of Barbara, who's busy shepherding the English department at Iowa State. So it's nice to be home. I'm home.
And your mother lives here,
And my mother lives here as well. Yes,
big deal.
But why do you like composing in Ames? I mean, why? I mean, you could be in New York. You could be in Honolulu.
Well, actually, the thing I like about it is it's just it's quiet. It's a nice place to work, and it's a friendly environment. I think when you say Ames and you're outside of Iowa, people think you're out in the middle of a cornfield. And in fact, although you are, I tell people I am only 40 minutes from the regional airport. How far away are you in New York from your regional airport? I can get to the Des Moines airport quicker than you can get to LaGuardia. So I just feel like it's you can get anywhere from here. And
yes, and we have way less traffic.
Yeah. Yes, and way less traffic, except for a few snow days.
I've got a difficult question for you, Michael, and I don't know how this will work. What would your life be like if you could never hear music? Or parallel question, how does music make your life more meaningful?
That's a very deep question to put on the radio. Could foresee, believe it or not, a life without music. I enjoy words enough that if I, for some reason or other, had no access to music, I could probably get
read the rest of your life away.
Yeah. Yeah, I could read the rest of my life away. But I don't. I enjoy performing, and I particularly. I'm actually more interested in the relationship between music and words and music and theater. I don't, believe it or not, care that much anymore in my own life for pure instrumental music, even though I've written some. Mm-hmm. I find I'm really interested in music and words and the stories that you can tell through music. So that's where I attach to opera and songwriting, is that story part. And that's why I like country, because that country has cool, fun stories in the songs, you know.
Michael was singing a country song before we got on the air.
We'll do that some other interview. After I learn how to play guitar properly.
We've been listening to Michael Ching, a composer of music, especially opera and musical theater. Any final comments you'd like to share with us, Michael?
Oh, well, no, thank you, Jim. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
KHOI covers the performing arts. And music is important to our listeners. We value music and know that it matters in your lives. A community with no music would be no community at all.
Would you agree with that, Michael?
Absolutely.
Some people think music is dead Europeans. Well, KHOI does not share that belief. Michael is quite alive and clearly non-European ancestry. On top of that, the morale song Michael sang is, well, not exactly high culture, but it played an important role in a community dinner at the Iowa Arboretum.
And we do have a lot of diversity of music on KHOI. We have rap, jazz, classical, musical, soul, folk. Oh, yes, and we have our 8-track tunes from the 60s and movie music. Michael, you like diverse types of music.
I do. All different kinds of music. I think there's only good music and bad music, not different genres of music.
Or what you like and what you don't. Well,
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Duffy, my partner, just likes to hear the theme music to Local Talk. It's good Get Moving music. I like to bring in all my diverse musical interests to the show. I play interludes that include international music, classical music, pop, musicals, as it fits and adds to the verbal content, kind of like what Michael was saying.
You know, it's true on the Donna Lana show. Lana is the music curator for the show. And since she's also a dance caller, she plays a lot of folk music, early American music, Irish music. And I really enjoy it, too. So listen to KHOI music. Go to our website, khoifm.org, and get a program schedule to find out which music you want to listen to.
And while you're on the website, here we go, hit the donate button. How about that?
Or call 292-2878. And for those of you who may not be listening in Iowa, it's area code 515, and become a sustainable member of KHOI Radio to keep us on the air.
Our monthly expenses are over $7,500 a month, and it all comes from community members such as yourself. Every penny. For us to stay on the air and to continue to improve our program, we need listeners like you to become members and to renew their membership.
And don't forget, it's all volunteers. So our $7,500 a month is actually just out and out hardware, electricity, rent. All of us in the community are contributing our interests and our voices. So call 515-292-2878 or go to the website khoifm.org and join now. It is getting to the season of giving, so get into the seasonal spirit today and give. Or even you could give KHOI memberships for Christmas presents.
I never thought about that. That's a good idea.
Yeah, for us that have shows, it might be a little self-serving, but I think it's a good idea.
I think we got to talk to Ursula about that one.
I bet she's thought of it already. She's pretty creative.
If you call the next 5 minutes, actually, I'll give you an opportunity to request any topic you want on Local Talk. As long as I do not encourage anything unethical, I will cover it. It's like a musical request opportunity. Let's hear one last song from Michael's work. It's a piano piece that he wrote. So, and I look forward to morel season with you in the spring.
Happy hunting.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Story County.
That's the co-host for this show today, Donna Prinsgitis, and I'm your host, Jim Warble. We've been interviewing Michael Cheng about his work and the creative process of putting things together. I would like to introduce our next Ames Cultural Ambassadors, as I'm calling these people, Julie Fox Henson and Alan Henson, to the show. Julie is the co-concert master with Jonathan Sturm with the Des Moines Symphony. Alan is the principal cellist with the Central Iowa Symphony. They have numerous other groups they played with, which I'm certain will probably come up eventually. They're also personal friends of mine. I was delighted to have both of them to a Seder where Alan played his cello. And they were both music educators for my son, Ian. So I'm honored to welcome both of you to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
I want to ask you, basically, most people pick up strings early in their life. Julie, how did you get started in stringed instruments?
Well, I have to say that it started with my father loving to listen to Yasha Heifetz recordings at home. So I heard a lot of violin music at home, and my older sisters played violin. So when a Suzuki violin teacher came to my classroom and said, "Who wants to play the violin?" I was six. I was in first grade, and I raised my hand because I thought, well, of course I'm going to play the violin. So I raised my hand, and I started going to the Suzuki classes there at my school without my mother, because I didn't tell her about it. So they
without your mother?
Without my mother, which...
Wow.
Yeah, so they called her and said, "Julie's coming to our Suzuki violin lessons. Where are you?"
Yes.
So she started coming, and we enjoyed it.
In case people, a listener does not know, the parents are usually heavily involved with Suzuki instructors. And Julie is a certified – you are a certified Suzuki instructor?
Yes. I've had several of the – training on several of the books. Yes. And, went through the method myself. And
Alan, how did you get started with a stringed instrument?
Well, I'm afraid my start was a little bit more pedestrian. I just started in the public school system in fourth grade on the bass. Now, I thought I was signing up for cello, but the orchestra director had me place my hand on a piece of paper, and he traced a pencil line around my fingers, and he said, "Oh, you've got bass hands," and he talked me into bass.
You had bigger hands than other guys.
Oh no, I didn't. I'm not really physiologically ideally suited to the bass, but that's how he got me hooked.
And you've been playing since. So it was just there was an orchestra in your high school or your I guess elementary school.
Yeah, right? They had a very strong program in Fort Morgan, Colorado. Started in fourth grade, goes up through high school, and it was actually in high school where I picked up the cello.
Okay, and so you both started playing. You got your degrees in music from where respectively?
Well, we both got our bachelor's degrees in music from University of Colorado, Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my master's degree in chamber music from University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Okay.
And I started grad school at Rice University and took some time out to go into the Navy for a short stint as a pilot candidate.
I didn't know that. Another side of a coin I never knew about.
Yeah, we'll keep that story short. But then I finished up my master's work at UW-Milwaukee as well.
Okay, so you've been with each other for quite a while then, since college.
Undergrad, yeah.
1981.
Yeah.
We might have met
in
Colorado All-State Orchestra. We might have met when we were in high school at the All-State Orchestra, but we don't remember it. Significantly.
Well, we didn't really know each other until college.
All right. Well, they're both very accomplished musicians, and they are with the Blue Sage piano trio, which plays every summer in Colorado, at least for the last several summers you've been playing with them. And let's listen to a very short segment of a piano trio by Mendelssohn, the Andante or slow section of it. We'll listen to it for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Mendelssohn's a great composer, and the musicians are equally great.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Anyhow, Julie made a comment. She is not co-concert master. She is assistant concert
master.
That's
important.
So she wanted to get that clarity to it. So I apologize for that mistake. Well, you two could be anywhere in the United States. You've both lived other places. Obviously, Colorado's a beautiful place. You spend some of your summers in Colorado. How did you get to Ames, and why do you stay in Ames?
We first came to Iowa through some friends in the music department at University of Northern Iowa who arranged for my quartet at the time, the Montclair Quartet, to have a residency at UNI. So that started our Iowa connection, and then when we,
the handy part of that was they needed a bass teacher at the same time.
So, yeah, we were both at UNI for a while, and then we both started playing with the Des Moines Symphony and driving from Dysart, Iowa, to do that. And when Peggy Earnshaw and Nan Bennett heard that I was thinking of...
Those are important names.
They are in this community. When they heard I was planning to move to the Des Moines area to start doing some teaching and playing, they recruited me to come here to take the advanced Suzuki students here in Ames. And we loved Ames from that first visit. So that's what got us here.
There, Nan and Peggy were active in this Parent Suzuki Association for many years because they had children active in it, and they needed another teacher who was more to take, as you said, the more senior students. So mm-hmm. So they were influential in that. And you followed your spouse, I assume, to Ames.
Well, yeah. That first year I went back and forth between Ames and Dysart to finish rehabbing our house up there. But, Ames was a good location for both of us. And, you know, it's so close to Des Moines that when you've got things going on in Des Moines, it's really, you know, it's not much different than driving across town in Des Moines.
Okay, well, thank you. We're going to be talking a little bit more because they are both music educators. We're going to take a short pledge break, and then we're going to come back and talk about music education with both of you because that's an important part of your life for both of you. 8 years ago, community radio in Central Iowa was, at best, an impossible-sounding dream.
And now we have a fully functioning radio station with a professional and delightful working space for producers, administrators, and community. Not just adequate, but really, really charming. And it was made by the hands of volunteers from our own community. And even though we dreamed of this, we could not anticipate how wonderful it would be. And the work done here is usually a lot of fun.
We have fun, Donna. I know you have fun with your show.
Oh.
This is
always
fun. We have
been hysterical sometimes.
And it's time to realize we do have community radio now in Central Iowa and to celebrate this and support this precious resource.
And 8 years ago, many wondered if a community radio station like this was financially feasible. It costs us around $7,500 a month to operate KHOI, and it is with that minimum amount of very little paid labor. It's almost all volunteer, except for one paid studio engineer, whom we all adore.
He's sitting right across from us. We knew that running a station like this on donations is ambitious, and it really is. I mean, you think about it. We have to raise more than $100,000 a year to keep this operation.
Yeah, and we have to create interesting programming,
yeah,
which has been the fun part.
Yeah. It seemed risky, but people believed in us like Field of Dreams. I volunteer because I truly love seeing the community grow, and this means people coming together and how that brings out the creativity and strength in everyone, not just people like Michael.
So will Central Iowa continue to support KHOI? Will you show your appreciation to have the privilege of community radio in your area?
At our transmitter house north of here by the radio tower, these words are written on the wall. Dream it, do it, live it.
We do this community radio station 24/7, and we are living the dream. Where will it take all of us, and where will it take you?
Start by joining KHOI family with a $55, $100, or $250 membership. And you can do that by calling 292-2878 or going to the website, khoifm.org, hitting the donate button, coming by the studio. We're always happy to see
you. And you can support by listening. The shows are fantastically varied. Pick up a schedule. You know, find the things that interest you and learn more about your community. I think Ames is such a rich community, and often I find new people like our two guests today that I did not know about and really appreciate the kinds of things that they bring to Central Iowa.
Let's get back to our guest, Julian Allen. Seems like you're passing your love of music to your children. I'm really impressed by that. Do you have two lovely boys, Bo and Fox? Tell us a little bit about what they do.
Fox is a cellist and Bo's a violinist. They both play in string quartets.
How old are they?
Fox is a senior and Bo is a freshman this year. Mm-hmm. And they're in two different schools. Fox goes to Ames. Bo goes to Gilbert. We're actually in the Gilbert School District. Gilbert doesn't have a string program. And so that was the genesis for starting these string quartets for the boys to have some sort of venue to play in, to develop their ensemble skills.
You've started two string quartets in part to help both of your children, as well as other children, such as my son. What is the role of these string quartets in music education? What are you trying to do with them?
Well, what's the point of taking private lessons if you're not actually going to perform? And this is a great way to perform at a higher level. You know, the standards can be a little bit more exacting. It's a little more exposed, but the rewards for your efforts, I think, really are worth it.
It's a wonderful development tool for growing up.
Sure. And, they learn to work with others. That's a skill, I suppose, that's as valuable as any other. Being able to disagree, try different ideas, give it your best shot, even if it's not your idea, and settle as a group on a final product that is going to be the best that you can produce.
So you really treat them like a regular string quartet and let them make a lot of their own decisions.
Sure. I mean, there are times when I'll dictate a bowing or or a phrasing, or we've got to fix some intonation here or there. But yes, they have a lot of input into their final interpretation.
And what are the names of the string quartets?
The quartet that Fox is in is the Sestrini Quartet, and that was started in 2007 with your son Ian as first violinist. Yeah. Jonathan Wolf was second violinist. Jotham Palaszczuk was the violist. And, of course, Fox was on cello. And that was four of the squirreliest boys you could put together. In
he had his hands full.
And, of course, the personnel has changed over the years. And, once we started introducing girls into that quartet, the dynamic changed a little. perhaps it was a little less rambunctious, a little more respectful of each other's
diversity can be good.
Yeah, it was good. Bo's quartet is the Clear String Quartet, and both of these quartets were named after instruments that the boys were playing on at the time that the groups were formed. So Fox was playing on a Sestrini cello, Bo was playing on a clear violin. Of course, neither one of them were playing on those named instruments anymore. But once you start, you start getting some name recognition in the community, you kind of need to keep the name.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Amara Piano Quartet might disagree with that.
Yeah, they changed.
But the current membership of the Sestrinis is Esther Lee, Tiffany Lowe, Joanna Held, and, of course, Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And the Clear Quartet is Jana Kim, Olivia Wong, Bo plays viola, and Grace Kim is the cellist. And incidentally, both of these quartets went to Idlewild Summer Music Festival this past summer. Two-week sessions. Yeah, an orchestral session and a chamber music session. And they were on full scholarship. And that's a
big deal.
Well, yeah, $6,000.
Yeah. Well, they must be good. Something else good in Ames. Yes.
They are. They are.
Quality.
This leads into music education. I consider both of you both of you, outstanding music educators as well as musicians.
Thank you.
And what is it? Well, first of all, what are you trying to do with music education? I know some of your students move on and do very, very good things. Caleb is one of Julie's, Caleb Polishek, who many people know, who plays with the Central Iowa Symphony, is one of Julie's former students. But not all, some people are like Ian, too. So what are you trying to do with music education?
Well, for me, I want to be sure they have an appreciation for, well, for listening to music, but also learning it from the inside, and that they've learned how to, you know, dissect something, work hard on something that doesn't come easily to them, and yet to be able to enjoy it while they're going through that process. So it is important to me that they have a positive experience with their lessons, and I've had many students who've, you know, moved on and graduated, and even if they don't stick with it, they have very fond memories of their violin lessons and their training and you know, want to come back to it in some way. And some really do and have made careers out of it, which I'm thrilled about.
Other than Caleb, would you care to share any of those other names?
Well, sure. In our community right here, Gretchen Thiesfield is teaching and is a regular member of the Des Moines Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And Leah, her sister, who's now Leah Kohlner, mm-hmm. is also teaching, playing the symphony. Emily Mullaney, who graduated from Gilbert High School, then went on to St. Olaf and then got her master's from Boston Conservatory and mm-hmm. has just gotten a substitute position with the Des Moines Symphony. And so she's substituting.
She's moving up.
And Sarit Luban has decided to come back to music and is studying it in graduate school and has decided she loves it and wants to make that a career also.
Interesting. Alan, what are you trying to do?
Well, so far none of my students have gone into music as a career, but you know that was never. I don't think that was ever my expectation or theirs. But you know, my goal is to give them something that they can enjoy for a lifetime, something that they can get together with friends and do and you know have something more to show for it than you know watching a movie or playing a video game. There's something
something active. Yes.
But on the purely analytical side of it, there are sufficient numbers of studies that have been done on string players and the correlation between having studied a stringed instrument and test scores in science and math and language, and there is an average of 15% difference between those who did study a stringed instrument and those who did not. And that it doesn't have – there's not the same correlation between voice or band instrument. It seems to be endemic to string players, and I think it's because of the real independence you have to develop between the left hand, you know, doing the fingering and, the entirely different sort of motion that you're creating with the right side when you're with bowing. And if you can think about that, when you have that kind of independence of motion, you're having to create more connections between the two hemispheres of your brain. So, if they gain nothing else from it, they're getting smarter by playing the cello.
I also read a very recent study that said people who make music, whether they play or have some musical abilities, actually have a. It's a way of building neural circuitry that lowers anxiety.
Interesting.
So,
well, I don't know about that. I'm kind of an anxious person.
Yeah, but can you imagine what you might be if you didn't play music? Who knows?
I'd be a basket case.
So the benefits, the health benefits of being a musician.
Yeah. I gotta have to ask you, since you both do performance and education, I'm just curious. I know both are important to you, but which is more important and why?
Go ahead.
It's a tricky question. I do love them both, but something that's funny with me when I'm performing or rehearsing, that doesn't feel like work at all, in the least.
Really?
It doesn't feel like work.
So practice for you is not onerous.
No. And teaching, I love it, but it does feel like work. I feel like I, you know, I need to be sure I'm doing the most for that student that I can, that their time and their money is valuable, and I'm trying to help them be as, you know, as great as they can be. And that's a little more work. I love it, but yeah, for some reason the performing and the playing is not work.
For me, it'd be difficult to separate the two because I think I've learned more about playing my own instruments by teaching than I ever did from, you know, actually studying with somebody else. I mean, when you have to put it in words, or you know, when you have to transmit it to somebody else, then if something was just comes automatically to you and you have to think about it and describe it and pass that on, then you've really, you know, dug deep. But I think being a performer makes me a better teacher, and I think teaching informs my playing as a performer. So it's hard to separate the two.
See, you can't. It's almost they feed each other too much.
Yeah.
Well, we've been listening to Julie Fox Henson and Alan Henson, both string musicians and music educators, doing important activities here in Ames and nationally. So thank you for what you're doing. Do you have any final comments you'd like to share with our listeners?
You should put in a pitch for your show that's coming up here. Julie will be playing for the national tour launch of Bridges of Madison County down at the Civic Center in Des Moines. We both do quite a few shows that, you know, the traveling Broadway shows when they come through. And that's certainly one of the things I enjoy most. The Bridges is coming up just this month.
Right. The next weekend and the first weekend of December.
Okay. All right. Well, I think probably tickets are still available.
Yeah, I think so.
And so if you want to hear that and see that event, and they both do a lot of performing activities throughout the state of Iowa and different things. So thank you for coming to the show, and I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for asking us,
yes,
Jim.
It's been my pleasure.
It's an honor.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host with Jim Werbel.
And Donna Prisgintas
is my co-host. On today's show, we had three people I would consider to be Ames cultural ambassadors. We started the show with Michael Ching, who recently had a world premiere of his opera Alice Riley in Savannah, Georgia. Then our next guests were Julie Fox Henson and Alan Henson, string musicians with the Des Moines Symphony and CIS, respectively, at Central Iowa Symphony. They are also parents and music educators.
Lots of local talent, which we get to showcase on our wonderful local radio station, KHOI 89.1 FM, Heart of Iowa.
You can listen to any of our talk shows, any of our past shows at our website at khoifm.org. There you'll find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feeds. Local Talk was engineered by one of my favorite engineers, Rick Morrison. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from the CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also had music from Michael Ching's opera Alice Riley and the Blue Sage Piano Trio playing Mendelssohn. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. Oh, that's when you're contacting us about that. You can also make a donation. So that's the same number, 292-2878, or contact us through our website at khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Tell them to become a member by pledging at 515-292-2878. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what makes KHOI possible.
And
thanks for listening.
And see you again on the radio.
KHOI Community Radio sincerely invites you to stop by the KHOI studios next Monday at 4 p.m. and help us welcome noted economist Richard D. Wolff to Ames. Wolff hosts a nationally syndicated radio program, Economic Update, heard Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on KHOI, and directs the nonprofit organization Democracy.